You're listening to ERCEL, the European Art Radio Creative Exchange Lab radio programme. We have Lucinda Guy and we have Lala Rodrigo Tara. Was that an okay pronunciation of your name, Lala?
That was quite okay. It's just in the radio, so okay. Whenever you stumble, I know you mean me.
Lucinda is coming from Devon, quite a rural community in Britain, and her radio station is Sound Art. And Lala is coming from Vienna, an urban setting, with Orange 94. And what we want to explore today with the three of us is this idea of community involvement or outreach programmes, which basically means is how do we develop up a programme and an access point for people to come to the radio, to get involved, to get their voices heard, to tell their stories, and what that really means in practice, and also what their own kind of, I suppose, academic exploration of this idea of outreach and community is. So I'm going to hand over to Lucinda, who has her own practice is around this idea of, I suppose, access to radio, what that means, how do you get people involved, but in a more experimental approach than the usual approach.
Yeah, thanks. I suppose I've always felt that if there is such a thing as an experimental approach, that it's just a way of making radio more accessible, so not making it. And certainly, you know, being placed in a rural area, that there's not much sense being too obsessed with urban ideas of what sonic arts are, or do you know what I mean? That more kind of electronic based work. Not that we don't have those kind of artists, because we do, but that's not to be our sort of leading definition, perhaps, you know, of where we're coming from in terms of content. It's more that there's a sort of freedom of approach that anybody can kind of find on their own terms. And I think over the years what we found in reality is that we have a sort of perhaps typical member of our station who would be someone who is an artist in some way, or has, you know, maybe their background or their training is in arts, but they've had a lot of things holding them back, you know. So there isn't a sense of like, oh, is this for the artists, the sort of privileged few, or is this for the people that we're reaching out to? But that there isn't any kind of boundary like that, because obviously artists are community members, and they need somewhere where they can come together and find one another and be safe, you know, to explore their own identity and express their stuff and to learn and to, you know, move forward. So in theory, we're there for anyone and everyone. The people that are most involved are, yeah, they're an artist of some form, and they've got some other issues like homelessness, or, you know, issues that arise from their gender or sexuality, or their financial situation, or whatever it is. There's a lot of stuff going on for people that holds them back in life. And I had wondered that here with Talek, you know, that it's an interesting place, and that there might be people who sort of feel lost in it, because they're very creative people and they feel a sense of not fitting in, and that they might need a place to gather around where they feel safe, and that they understand each other when they walk through the door, that they're accepted. And you know, because it's if you're in the middle of a city, there are places for the freaks together, you know. Yeah. And when you're not, and of course this is much more urban than us, but it's still a bit of an outpost and perhaps more conservative in some ways in a city centre, that it might be important to have places where people can gather.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting idea that and actually there's two aspects to this. It's not just that this is a radio, this is Sound Art Radio, which in itself has a completely different barrier and kind of, I suppose, image to it than just the normal radio. And what you're saying is that you're using the arts as a way of not, you're searching out the sub communities within that, and you're saying here's a safe place for you to come and explore and be creative, and we won't worry about the term sound art for now. And I think you in a previous conversation we had, Lucinda, you talked about this idea of it being an accidental sound art, that often the work that comes out of it isn't formal in a sense of, you know, we want to create this work. It comes afterwards by mishaps, by mistakes, and by that gorgeous space that allows people to fail and fail safely. But you're using the arts as saying that this is an umbrella of which we can set up, we can create this space for the sub-communities to come in, the different sections of the communities. And I suppose from the hindsight, I would say that it's a very troubled word, community, because it implies this homogenous group of which society isn't. And what you're doing is you're saying there are little sections that I go after as a kind of the art director of the Sound Art radio station. And I say, look, come to here. Here's in practical terms, here's a studio. Here's a place where you can explore some ideas, have a conversation. And that's how you get people involved, is it?
Kind of. I suppose those types I was referring to are less the people we've gone after than all the people who've come to us. Yeah. So people kind of find it and they come in, they go, and you get the sense someone wants to know, and you want to say, like, you've come to the right place, you know, like there is that sense. But in terms of people we go after, they're probably people who'd be less likely to do that or to identify with it. So we might, you know, at the moment I'm going into college for like young adults with learning disabilities, so they might not just like go, oh, sound art, that's my thing, you know, that funny little art thing, you know. But so but I don't think there is a difference between the, you know, the normal people and the arty people. I think people have lots of different roles they play.
I think there's a slight difference in the reception of this not fitting in society in the suburbs of bigger cities than on the countryside, because on the countryside people often have the feeling, if I would leave it would be better, you know, I can leave and then it's better. So they know this slight distortion they have in their, let's call it soul or mind or whatever. And on the, what I experienced is that on the peripheries of big cities, people sort of don't feel well, but they don't even notice that. Like, they know something's wrong, something's not really that working out there well, or I don't know, they don't really find a space, so they gather in their individual spaces, in their little flats, use individualized public or not public transport, use individualized transports, because they all stick to their own identity in their own space. So sometimes they don't really they don't really know that there is this distortion with the rest. And I find this very interesting in the peripheries. So if you offer something that's somehow slightly different, referring also to the ironic fact of the periphery of suburbs of big cities, this, then they sort of can click to it. But sometimes they need this little push, that they actually see what they are missing. And I think this is, in Talaga, it looks as if this part of the city really is searching for this missing bit.
Yeah, I think there's two conversations here. I think that there's this idea of how we get people in the door, and I'd like to explore that a little bit on a practical level. And then there's the other conversation, which is the difference between rural city and where we're based, which is Tala, which is suburban. And I think that's it's a separate conversation. And I think also that, well, for us, I'm not from Tala, but I've been living here for 2-3 years, and it's a very much a learning curve of how that reality is when you live in what I would see is not, to be honest, I would have found it a kind of the nowhere space, in that it's not rural, it's not city, it's somewhere, it's purely a living space, it's got houses and that's what it's there for. But the truth of it is, when you live here, it's not like that. The young people, and we've worked with a lot of young people in Tala, identify themselves purely from this place. They are Tala based. Dublin doesn't really feature in their social sphere. Their life is here. But you're right, Lala, it is subsections. I mean, Tala is made up of a lot of different districts, and it's very interesting that each of those districts, which from a kind of a fresh eye, they look like housing estates, and they're just another little housing estate, but actually they're all their sub-communities, and they live within, they all have their own community centre, they all have their own social identity. And when the young people talk about going into town or stepping out of their town, they're actually talking about coming to the square in Tala, which is the central point of, which is a shopping centre. And they travel not to Dublin, they travel to Jobstown if they're coming from Fettercairn. So it's travelling between the different, and maybe that is that feeling that we all, and what you said earlier, Lucinda, which is that we within this community, we all identify ourselves within a certain subsection.
They
do it physically.
I really want to refer to that also, to the physical space reliance. I mean, and it's nice that I have this book here, which you gave to Mapping. It's Mapping Life, Exploring
Futures. It's a book
called
Mapping Lives, Exploring, which was done by Common Ground, and it maps the learning process of community outreach programs within an arts context.
So what I find interesting about these concepts is that you actually you give away the let's say the you're not the expert anymore. I mean, we are not the experts in this kind of thing. You give away the question of subjective biography mapping to the people themselves, and the radio itself, as in education now, becomes just a media, like if you would draw a picture or take photographs, or I don't know, make a Google mapping project or a soundscape project. So the radio itself becomes one media in a big biographical exploration of citizens of this place, and this is also now returning to the education part. This is what education, I think, can do. So we can like offer workshops, ideas, ways of thinking, strategies in how to explore identity or how to explore community, but we don't create the community. So we give little drops and hints to people of making them, enabling them to know what they're missing, to know what they like, to know what they, how they would like to live, and what kind of society would like to create. And if it turns out they would like to live in a society with two cars and a shopping center, then it's okay. I mean, it's not my life, but then it's the way it is. So this passing on authority and going away from this is how education should be, and this is how communities are created, and this is how grassroots organizations are built. This is. Go away from that and go more or less to a practical handbook of what you could do.
No,
how life could look like.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think what we do well in radio is provide if it's done properly, is provide a facility, a framework for people to come in, which is exactly what you said, Lucinda, is to provide that safe space for people to come and explore. It's not up to us to define what that is within themselves. Except, interestingly, we ran a project here called Radio Tallow, which was looking at community. It was a former community radio. It was a 5-day temporary license. And we worked with about 35 different NGOs and community groups in the area, and we did some training, but some of it was more open, that people came in and just explored and talked about their ideas. So, for example, we worked with the Travellers Association, and we didn't want them to come in as the usual. Travellers in Ireland have very little access to mainstream media, and when they are mainstream media, it is there to, in the negative sense, they're there to defend a point. They're there to say, you know, there might have been a trouble and why were they kicked out of that hotel. It's the same narrative each time because they're only invited on in response to a negative issue. So we said, we're not interested. I don't want to know about your problems with where you're parking your caravan, about not being able to get into a hotel and all of the prejudice that happened to you. I want you to come in and talk about something that you're interested in. That's all. And it was a completely different explorative space for them, and it was a really interesting result out of that. But that's very much us saying, we're not here to lead your discussion or academic about what you feel about a community. We're here to facilitate you to do that. But interestingly, Radio Tallow itself became a community, and it became a really interesting integrative space, because as the Traveller group were moving out, they were hanging in the production room, and then Romanian group were coming in, and they were exchanging information about, don't be nervous, it's grand, you'll be fine, it's really good fun, it's really relaxed. Mm-hmm. And in those moments, the social space, real magic really happened, because people who wouldn't normally associate were associated because they had a common interest, and that common interest was, even if it was just simple as getting over the nerves, go back in the mic, and there was a real beauty to that. And I suppose, going back to you, Lucinda, when you say you welcome groups, and sometimes I love to hear, but what's the practical of that? I mean, you talked about like a little thing where you said your sound art radio has a teapot with your name on it. Like, so it's sort of saying, well, one of the things we do as a social space is say, come in, have a cup of tea. I know it's very obvious, but we forget that it's in the meeting space, it's in the corridor, it's in the chats around it, that real kind of exchange can happen. And the space where we sit in front of the mic is great, but actually for us, when we ran Radio Tallow, I would have liked to mic the production room, because there were moments in there I never thought I'd see. And we invited down a community development worker from Belfast to talk about this idea of building community in Belfast, which is a really troubled space to do that. And we invited him to come down to talk because they've done a lot of development work around integration. And he sat in that production room for 2 hours, just, you know, hanging out. And he said to me afterwards, he says, that's the best example I've ever seen of integration. Just there, what you're doing. Because it's not saying to somebody, come in and talk about being a Protestant, I mean, talk about Catholic. It's saying, come in and have, you know, come in and talk about being nervous on the radio station. It's finding another thing to talk about that's not your key identifier. And within that, you find the connection and the curiosity about each other. And for you, Lucinda, what's that welcoming space? How do you do that? Because it's easy to say we welcome people in. What does that really mean?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You can't kind of just say, oh well, you can come in. It's up to you. Here we are, yeah. You know, because it doesn't, it's not enough. You know, I think that's what, I mean, community radio, it actually means it's the community of people who come together to make radio. And then that has an effect for the listener. But you're not, you know, for us, we're not driven by the listener's needs. We're driven by the need to express and to share and to be together. And then, you know, people can feel that through the airwaves and become part of it as a listener too. But, I mean, we do very simple, practical things to support that to happen more. One is having a membership scheme. Sounds so obvious, but it makes such a big difference. And it's free because we used to say it was like a tenner a year. So people didn't get round to joining up. They go, oh, I'll do it next time I come in because I haven't got my... You know, so it is that we just need to make this free and really simple. So that the first time you meet someone and they inquire, like, oh, maybe I could do a show, you go, right, here's your membership form. And then they're on your mailing list and then they stay engaged. You know?
And then they're part of it.
They're part of it and they own it. And the membership form is what they're signing up to is our values, not to a financial commitment or a commitment to make a program, but they're saying, yeah, believe in this thing. And they have a little card. Yeah. So that's really helped. And then we have a newsletter that goes to all the members roughly every week. But they can put their own news on it too. So we don't. It's not just us telling them, like, oh, there's this thing happening. It's for the members to say, who wants to come on my show and talk about this? Or who wants to come to my gig? Or, you know, whatever's going on for them. Or I need a you know, flat share. So, and then we have meetings for members, like, a few times a year. So we have... things like we ask different program makers to do a presentation about their show for the others so they learn about each other's shows. And then we have other things like open days, which is really important because you might feel like, oh, this is always open, it's always okay to turn up, but you have to make a time and a place and say, this is it, this is the open day, this is when you come in. And you can, you know, we have ones that are just, you go straight on the mic really, so you come to the open day. And we've had, like, voice days. It's like, oh, this is a voice-only day, so you can bring a poem or a song, or you can laugh, or you can talk about something. And then people come in, and their names goes up on the blackboard for, like, the next slot, and they come in the studio. So, but they didn't have to come in the studio. They could just come and chat. So it's putting, like, certain strategies in place because you have to be kind of proactive about it, or go to, you know, events, go to other places, whatever it takes, really, to people to know, yeah, this is ours and we own it, and we can pop in and out and we can use it as a resource.
I guess it's all about, if you say, providing framework, and the question is how to do the balance between providing structure and caring and sharing, like, how does it really work on one hand? And then you really have to have people who have a commitment towards it. And although this word is, you know, this widely driven by NLP and so on, but it really has to do with people who care and who give more than a damn. I mean, that's a main thing. And what I also want to add is that within providing structure, it's always a problem. On one side, you dominate people because you provide a structure. They probably don't like it. They probably don't agree. It's like in a family. I mean, if you it's lunchtime, mom, and then nobody cares. But if you miss it, it's also not good for the whole family. So it's really like that. So and if you see it like that, I think it gets easier. So the experience I have now is now not only from the radio but also from other collective art projects or or collective project is that people who realize that you actually care, and if you make a difference in take it in a theoretical sense of Lefebvre, if you make a distance between what people say and what they actually do. And that is something. So a community has to bear the fact that people might say something which is unbearable, but they probably do something which is wonderful. And dealing with that as a structure, as an organization, is not always so easy, I guess. So, or the other way around, people say things which are wonderful, but at the end they never do anything.
Yeah.
So as a structure, you sort of have to... Yeah, or as an organization, you sort of have to.
I think that's very interesting.
To take it laid back, keep cool.
Yeah,
You know, say okay, go ahead.
Yeah,
say that, do that, but you know, stick to certain rules. Yeah. But don't hurt anybody. But unless this is happening, just do it.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting. That tension between having to build the structure and the framework to support people to be creative, but be open enough for people to feel that sense of freedom. And they may well pull against the structure because you're the parent that's laying down the rules, but in a way it's necessity. And I think, Lucinda, for you that's very interesting, because when you talk in the sense of we're very open and we're about people welcoming in, and they can say, well, actually, if you tease apart what you do, you build quite a very intriguing and intricate structure that frames that. And if you didn't have that, I think it'd be a much more closed space, because I think what it would look like is a radio station that lots of very clever people go in and make lots of loud sound, and I can't find, because there's no doors. And unless you provide those doors for people to go through within those structures, there isn't. And we're going to wrap this section up because I think it leads into the next, which is very much about how do you build that programme. And we're talking about sound art here, but we talked about community, and we put the sound art as this kind of sense of accidental work that happens out of it, or the creative exploration that can let people explore a more kind of loose narrative or play with their sounds. But no matter what the radio station is, we still have to look at this idea of programming and frameworking. So we're going to move on to the next section. We look at that idea of framing the programming aspect of it, which crosses over from what you're talking about, Lucinda, when you let this open mic and how people do that kind of explorative work.